Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. I am truly honored to be able to present to you a woman who I consider to be one of the most courageous, most visionary, most impressive, and most important fighters in that war for the free world, Ayaan Hirsi Ali. You probably know her from her various appearances in all of the right places in the media, but most especially with her collection of extraordinary books that have really brought us, I think, an appreciation of the nature of the enemy we're facing and what might be done about it that is perhaps unsurpassed. She is with us for two segments, I'm very pleased to say, and I just wanted to especially plug, in addition to The Caged Virgin, Infidel, and Nomad, her previous books, her brand new one, Heretic: Why Islam Needs a Reformation Now. Ayaan, thank you so much for finding time for us. I know how frantically overbooked you are. This is such important work, and we're glad to be able to share a little bit of it with you and with our audience. Thank you.
Thank you, Frank. Thank you. So happy to talk to you.
Good. Well, let's jump right into it. Ayaan, you have called for a reformation of Islam. Before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about what unreformed Islam is, as you see it now.
Unreformed Islam is totalitarian. Unreformed Islam is the application of Sharia law. And if you want to know exactly what happens when you apply Sharia law, you have to look at the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria.
There are those who argue that what the Islamic State is practicing is really not Islam. It is some extremist interpretation. You know from firsthand what Sharia is. How does the traditional authoritative version of Sharia track with what the Islamic State is doing?
Well, Sharia law, listen, I use the history of my own life to explain to people what it means to try and aspire to live, because I don't think it's possible for a human being to actually attain all of the demands of Sharia. But as a woman, you have to cover from head to toe if you want to leave the house. But even when you're inside the house and you're with males who are not your relatives, you still have to cover yourself. Sharia law dictates marriage law. It goes as intimate as what goes between you and your husband. What happens between a child and a parent, a teacher and a student. And ultimately, it just gets up and up, and it is all the way to, in the state, the leader and the people or the citizens of a state. Sharia law dictates absolutely everything. Sharia banking, Sharia dictates holy war. Sharia is all about foreign policy and domestic policy. It tries to cover absolutely everything.
Jihad not least, as you say. It is an injunction, as I understand it, really, to engage in jihad. And Ayaan, one of the things that we are challenged by here in the West is the lack of clarity, not only about what you've just described as the authoritative practice of Sharia, but the fact that this jihad can take different forms, depending on who's engaged in it and the circumstances in which they are perpetrating it. Obviously, since 9/11, we've all had a short course on the horrors of violent jihad, the terrifying kind of jihad. But can you talk a little bit about how the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, perpetrates another form, what they call civilization jihad, in Western societies like ours?
The Muslim Brotherhood, unlike other Islamist organizations, tries to use the institutions, the freedoms, and the concepts of freedom in the Western world to destroy that freedom. So, for instance, they will use the concept of the freedom of speech to say it's okay to destroy the state of Israel. It's not okay, it's an imperative. They will then use the institutions that are in place. For instance, the freedom of religion, which is extremely valuable, the freedom of conscience and the freedom of association and all the institutions related to that, to destroy those very, very, very same institutions and freedoms. And they completely, and they're savvy, they're media savvy, they completely understand how it works in the West, and that by putting on this mask of non-violence, by also putting on a mask of saying that they speak for Islam, meaning they want you, the American, to believe that they are the voice of 1.65 billion Muslims, they get across, they think that's their constituency. They want you to believe that that is their constituency, even though they don't have the constituency. So that is a clear, that's clear deception.
Yeah. And yet what we're endlessly told is these are the leaders of the Muslim community, these Muslim Brotherhood front organizations like the Council on American-Islamic Relations and the Islamic Society of North America and the Muslim American Society and so on, organizations which, by the way, have made it their business to try to silence you. I mean, freedom of speech for them, but not for you, Ayaan Hirsi Ali. How should those of us in the West who are interacting with the Muslim community regard these self-appointed putative leaders? How are they regarded by Muslims in this country themselves, let alone by us?
I think we just see them, most people see them as benign. I think most Westerners don't know who the Muslim Brotherhood is. And that is the thing. I mean, if you don't even know your own history as a Westerner, and this is where we are now, within our own education, we don't know. We know, as time goes by, we know less and less about National Socialism and less about communism, because we don't feel threatened by that. We think that belongs in history. So when you have the Muslim Brotherhood with their motto, Allah is our objective, the Prophet is our leader, the Quran is our law, jihad is our way, dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope, that is the motto of the Muslim Brotherhood. They're advising our government.
Yes, and this is so profoundly troubling, because in addition to that credo, as you say, Ayaan, we have, in addition, a mission statement from the Muslim Brotherhood that was introduced into evidence in the largest terrorism financing trial in U.S. history, which says explicitly its mission is to destroy Western civilization from within. And yet, we are seeing our government taking counsel and, in some cases, giving employment to these Muslim brothers and enabling them to take power in countries or try to undermine other governments and seek power. If you had a word to say to these American officials about reliance on the Muslim Brotherhood, what would it be?
It would be that even though the Muslim Brotherhood goes around saying that they are legitimate, that they have legitimacy, that they have the majority of Muslims on their side, please do not take them. Don't believe them. Don't believe them, because they don't. You can see day in, day out the struggle that's taking place in Tunisia. You see when some of the people that the Muslim Brotherhood indoctrinated and bribed elected them to office, what the other Egyptians did. In Egypt, people chose, they would rather live under a dictatorship than under the Muslim Brotherhood. So I think what happens is our leaders they hear a word like legitimacy and they think, well, there was an election and a majority of people elected the Muslim Brotherhood, so they must be the voice of Islam. And that's a big mistake. The Muslim Brotherhood is not the voice of all Muslims.
Yeah. In addition, it's compounded, it seems to me, Ayaan Hirsili, that we're led to believe that they're nonviolent, and therefore that must be a better kind of Islamism than the other. But as you say, this is simply a matter of tactics until they're strong enough to use violence, which they are perfectly prepared and God-directed to do. Ayaan Hirsili is our guest. We're going to come right back with more with her on what comes next, straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
This is Fred Flights for the Center for Security Policy. Is President Obama planning a surprise deal with Iran similar to the surprise deal his administration struck with Cuba to normalize relations? Ambassador John Bolton thinks so. He believes a recent decision by the Obama administration to remove Iran and its terrorist proxy Hezbollah from a list of terrorist states and organizations in a recent major intelligence assessment suggests such a deal is in the works. Bolton also believes Iran may agree to release 4 Americans that it has been holding prisoner for several years as part of the rollout of a nuclear agreement. Ambassador Bolton is concerned that these developments are an attempt by the Obama administration to distract the American public from focusing on the very dangerous nuclear agreement that it is trying to get with Iran. I agree with the ambassador, but I am hopeful that growing bipartisan concerns about this deal will ensure that Congress will not be fooled. I'm Fred Flights. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
This is Frank Effney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're visiting with Ayaan Hirsili, author, a former parliamentarian in the Netherlands, a woman who hails originally from Somalia, where she was raised in a Sharia adherent society. She knows whereof she speaks, and she warns us, most recently in her marvelous new book, Heretic, Why Islam Needs a Reformation Now, of the importance of not being taken in, not duped, not confused, not misled by those who would have us believe, for example, Ayhan, that the practice of Sharia is completely consistent with our constitution. I think the technical term for that in Arabic is taqiyya. But what do you say, again, to people who are being served up such blandishments, not to worry about it and the like? Is it true that Sharia is in any way, shape, or form compatible with the Constitution of the United States?
There are men in suits who are members of the Muslim Brotherhood, leaders of the Muslim Brotherhood, who wear Western suits, who speak perfect English with an American accent, who go around saying that what they stand for is in no way different from what the American Constitution stands for. Again, I would like to remind your listeners, they say Allah is our objective, the Prophet is our leader, the Quran is our law, jihad is our way. Dying in the way of Allah is our highest hope. The Muslim Brotherhood, as a movement, as an organization, gave birth to Al-Qaeda, to Lashkar-e-Taiba, to Jama'at al-Islamiyah, to Islamic Jihad, to Hamas, even to the Islamic State now in Iraq and Syria. When they go around saying that they are peaceful and that they want to play by the rules, I want our listeners and our American leaders to look at what is going on in Turkey. That is a man who indeed played by the rules. But then once he got to a place of power, look at what he's doing to the nation state of Turkey.
Yeah. Ayhan, before we turn to kind of your prescription for what should be done, one last line of questioning. What do you make of the insistence of men in suits, all right, but not Muslims, or at least we're told not Muslims, people like, well, Barack Obama, people like John Kerry, people like John Brennan, the director of Central Intelligence Agency, people not least, I guess, like Jay Johnson, the Secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, who just recently went beyond the line that we're hearing from most of these other folks, that all of this jihad business has nothing to do with Islam. It's all hijacking the faith. Jay Johnson actually said that reading the Quran gives him a sense of the quintessential American values.
You know what? I served in parliament in the Netherlands from 2003 to 2006. I was surrounded by well-intentioned, well-meaning, wonderful people who took these people at their word. The Chancellor of Germany said, you know, Islam is part of Germany. It is not just President Obama and American leaders. It is almost entirely all Western leadership, maybe with the exception of the Prime Minister of Canada.
He seems to have been braced up by some hard experience recently.
I think what people are seeing is that there's a leadership, there's a Western leadership that wants to convey to the Muslim world, we're not at war with Muslims. We want to help. We want to bring about peace. But we don't want to get caught up in this sectarianism. And what our Western leaders are displaying is a confusion about who to ally themselves with. For a long time, America was a formal ally of Saudi Arabia. But now Saudi Arabia is outed. We know what they are about. We know that, in fact, if you look at the jihadism and the turmoil that is in the Muslim world today, that is what they use their oil profits to spread across the world. Are they still our ally? We don't know. We're so confused about it. Should we be talking to the Islamic Republic of Iran? And by that, I mean the government. Should we be doing that? We seem to be so confused about it. Right now, there are these conversations between our government, along with other Western governments, and the government of Iran. And we don't know how that's going to end.
But it seems to me, Ayhan, that what we're experiencing here is the success of this civilization jihad. It is, seeking through other means to accomplish the objectives of imposing Sharia and restoring the caliphate and all that. And not surprisingly, well-meaning people, as you say, not just in the Dutch parliament, but in leadership positions throughout the West are really succumbing to it. But in your experience, what is the perception of the jihadists when they see infidels, as they think of us, behaving in this supine way, a submissive way?
So from the side of the jihadists, when they say, let's strike terror into their hearts, every time we are politically correct, every time we are quiet, every time we try to accommodate, they think that's because they struck terror into our hearts. That's why when Charlie Hebdo was attacked, I said, we need to go and publish those cartoons everywhere, because we don't want to convey the message to them that they were successful. Unfortunately, we did, and we're still doing it.
We are still doing it, which I think you would agree only causes them to think their strategy is working, and therefore they should redouble the effort, including, as the Quran enjoins them to make us feel subdued, which means, I think, more terror, more violence, more of the worst.
So, Frank, this is the point. Every time we convey, we try to get to them the message that we are restrained, and they interpret our restraint. Now I'm talking about the jihadists. They interpret our restraint as being subdued. And now I leave that to our intelligence community, well-thinking intelligence community, really fantastic people, to rethink this. And the only way to do it is to go through what these people are saying and how their message comes across.
And just in the last moment we have with you, Ayan, you have laid out a plan for bringing about a reformation within Islam, building up the moderate or reformist Muslims, the Meccan Muslims, as you call them, and countering more effectively the Medina Muslims, who I would consider to be the authorities of the faith. If we are to do that, presumably, at the very least, we must stop empowering and enabling and legitimating those Medina Muslims who, you know, are engaged in this kind of jihad against us, of the nonviolent kind, or peace, pre-violent kind, I guess is more accurate.
Against us and against Muslims. I mean, most victims are Muslims. So when they say Allah is our objective, the Prophet is our leader, then we need to review what the Quran says, because apparently what Allah said is in the Quran. And the Prophet, especially in his time after Medina, that is sort of what they roll out. That is, if you want to understand Sharia law, you have to study that. We have to throw out jihad. There's this concept that most Westerners don't know about, commanding right and forbidding wrong, but that is the way to get more and more Muslims to stay within. It's a form of social control and vigilantism that makes it extremely difficult for Muslims, individuals within the faith who are critical or who think critically, to share their criticism of their faith with one another. And they say, we love death more than we love life. And so how is it even possible that we in America, we can't defeat an ideology that goes all over the place, very explicitly saying that they love death?
We must understand that it is an ideology, and it is in fact one that has our death in mind. I am Hirsi Ali. Nobody describes this problem, this threat, better than you, or is more prescriptive in what to do about it, including with your marvelous new book, Heretic, Why Islam Needs a Reformation Now. I would just add, why we need Islam to be reformed now. Thank you for this time with you. I hope we'll have a chance to talk with you again soon. Congratulations on the book and all the work you're doing at the AHA Foundation as well. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for all you do. Thank you so much.
God bless.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
We're all part of your community.
We all play a role in keeping our community safe.
So protect your every day.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Glenn Beck has lately been rendering an extraordinary public service. The talk show host has pursued a long-running national security problem that too many other prominent figures have chosen to ignore. In a series of recent programs, Mr. Beck has addressed evidence that a prominent anti-tax activist named Grover Norquist has been associated with and enabled Muslim Brotherhood individuals, organizations, and influence operations. Yesterday, he grilled Norquist for an hour on his television program. It wasn't pretty. Norquist would have us believe that he was ignorant of, or at least not responsible for, the Islamic supremacist character of the people he hangs with and helps. That would make him a useful idiot rather than an agent of influence. No one who knows Grover Norquist thinks he's an idiot. We aren't either. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life, ones that make you smile, ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, answer. That's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here. Do this better than any station in town. Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're joined by Bill Gertz. We have a very special edition of Secure Freedom Radio. We're going to talk with him in two segments today about the developments that are taking place as seen from inside the ring. The title, of course, of his prize-winning column at the Washington Times. Bill is also the senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon, one of the country's foremost national security correspondents, and his perspective is always welcome here. Bill, good to have you with us as always.
Hi, Frank. Good to be on the program.
Well, I wanted to get sort of an overview, Bill, with you in this block. Let's talk first and foremost about Iran and the deal that is now shaping up. What are you hearing from your sources, which are among the best in the country, on the military's view of what the Obama administration seems to be settling for now in terms of a non-binding, an unverifiable, some even say an unwritten agreement with the Iranians on their nuclear weapons program?
Well, the Pentagon is kind of out of the loop on this, and they've been left to pick up the pieces in terms of trying to do some kind of a verification regime when it comes to that. But right now, it looks like the deal is going to be signed this weekend and that the U.S. has caved on major points, specifically allowing the Iranians to continue to enrich uranium through some 6,000 centrifuges, including several hundred at a place called Fordo, an underground fortified facility, which is going to be extremely hard to verify. This is just opening up Iran to allowing them to have a breakout capacity of their nuclear program. This is all part of the administration's drive to make a legacy for President Obama. He's trying to become the Kissinger for Iran. If we remember, Kissinger opened up China in the 70s, or at least made the overture there. He's trying to do the same thing with Iran. I don't think it's going to happen. The Iranian mullahs remain vehemently anti-U.S. On the other side of the Persian Gulf, we have a new conflict breaking out, this time between Iranian-backed rebels in Yemen and Sunni Arabs led by Saudi Arabia and Egypt. There's a conflict going on there. The U.S. is providing logistical and intelligence support to the Saudis, who are doing a bombing campaign of the Houthi rebels in Sana'a, and basically we're looking at possible ground invasion from Saudi Arabia into Yemen. So you've got that, and then on the other side, you've got the U.S. tacitly supporting the Iranians in their bid to help the Iraqis against the IS rebels, the Islamic State rebels that have pretty much taken over a large portion of Iraq. So it's an extremely complex situation in the Middle East, and it's certainly not getting easier. On top of that, you have the Pentagon releasing a classified document, declassifying a document which reveals Israel's nuclear capabilities. This has always been an unwritten law that you do not discuss Israel's nuclear deterrent capability, and this is really bad. This was politically motivated. It's going to lead to a larger nuclear arms race. It's going to spur the Iranians to continue developing their nuclear arms program, and it's also going to spur the Saudis and other states to consider developing a nuclear deterrent.
Bill, there's so much troubling about what you said. Let me just start with the first comment, that the Pentagon is being sidelined in the preparation of this deal. Now, I'm not surprised, frankly, given the low regard the Obama administration seems to have for the Defense Department. That said, what on earth are those who will supposedly be evaluating this agreement in Congress and elsewhere to make of the fact that this will evidently not reflect, possibly with the exception of the verification piece, the judgment and involvement in its preparation, at least, of the military in terms of the risks, the threats associated with this agreement?
Well, I think the fact that the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff is currently in Asia kind of speaks volumes to that. Obviously, the Joint Staff has a representative there, but they're not being consulted. I think you could describe the Obama administration's approach to these Iran talks in one word, appeasement. And I would put the word rank appeasement in front of it to emphasize what a bad deal it is and that it's going to make the world a much more dangerous place. It's short-sighted.
Yeah, not least because, as you say, Bill, quite apart from this betrayal of the Israelis yet again by divulging some of their most closely held secrets, the administration, with this appeasing of Iran, is clearly incentivizing everybody else in the region to think they better get their own nuclear capabilities. So proliferation is clearly one of the things that will be spurred by this agreement. But you've also described a degree of instability, some of it at the hands of the Iranians, some of which they're at least engaged in. In Yemen on the one hand and in Iraq on the other. Bill, to the extent that the military is playing a role, you've suggested, you know, logistics and intelligence in the case of the Saudis and their coalition partners going after the Houthis. And in Iraq, as I understand it, we now have military missions being run against some of the Islamic State targets in Tikrit. So talk about, you know, what level of consultation and involvement we're seeing more broadly on the part of the United States military in these conflicts? Are they being basically told to pick up the pieces?
Well, I think the key right now is the bombing campaign against Islamic State targets. It's an ineffective campaign. We're basically blowing up pickup trucks. They claim that this is part of the president's strategy to degrade and destroy ISIL. The fact remains that ISIL is spreading. I had an interview with Libya's ambassador to UAE this week, where he said the situation is so dire in that country that he anticipates an Islamic State attack on Italy within a matter of weeks, not months. And he said that they have captured aircraft, they have military trainers from the Libyan Air Force, they have civilian aircraft from the Libyan state aircraft, which could be packed with explosives. So we're really looking at an utterly failed policy on the part of the Obama administration to tackle the threat of the Islamic State.
Our guest is Bill Gertz. He is a prize-winning columnist at the Washington Times. His Inside the Ring column is truly required reading inside the Pentagon and elsewhere in Washington. And, of course, he works as a senior editor at the Washington Free Beacon as well. Against the backdrop of all of this, Bill, you've been reporting on warnings that the Joint Chiefs of Staff have been issuing about the preparedness of their services to contend with some of these calamities that are clearly unfolding before our eyes. Just give us a quick sense of what they're saying and whether it's being received on the Hill.
It's been only could be considered the most dire warnings by senior military leaders and commanders, starting with the Joint Chiefs of Staff, who testified to the House Armed Services Committee recently that the situation of American forces is reaching the point where if the weakening of our forces continues as a result of budget cuts, the U.S. military will not be able to do the mission that it has right now of being able to wage one war and hold another conflict at bay, and also to protect the homeland. This is what we have a military for, to be able to do that.
At a minimum to do that, if not to actually hold, be able to prevail in two conflicts simultaneously.
Right, and as a result of the turmoil in the Middle East, as well as the mishandling of policies towards Russia and China, we're facing a more dangerous world, and the perfect storm to combine with that is that our military has been severely weakened. You have the chiefs saying that we won't be able to do our job, and the cuts are coming. More cuts are on the chopping block, additional reductions in the military, and there doesn't seem to be any solution to it. We hear that both the Congress and the administration say that they're opposed to the Budget Control Act sequestration, and yet nothing changes. These cuts continue, and the military is becoming weaker and less ready on a daily basis.
Bill Gertz, we have to pause for just a moment. We'll come back on that subject and more with Bill Gertz, the Washington Times and Washington Free Beacon, straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Every day, the men and women of the United States Marine Corps demonstrate their commitment to defend the American way of life. Since 1775, we have served our nation as a force in readiness. From combat operations to humanitarian assistance in every corner of the world. No matter where the mission takes us today, or wherever our country needs us tomorrow, we always remember the land we call home. As Marines, we take a stand for each other, for our nation. For us all, the few, the proud, the Marines.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm Robert Muse, co-founder and senior counsel of the American Freedom Law Center, our nation's premier public interest law firm fighting for your faith and freedom in courtrooms across America. Make no mistake, we live in a pivotal time. Secular progressives such as Barack Obama and his surrogates are zealously sweeping religion from the public square, foisting Sharia law and other harmful international precedents into our courts and constitution, assaulting the traditional family, and weakening our national defense by, among other things, undermining the strength of our military through social engineering and political correctness. But I can assure you that the American Freedom Law Center is aggressively engaging our nation's enemies with offensive lawfare to defend our fundamental rights and to fight stealth jihad in all of its forms, including the civilization jihad being waged by Muslim Brotherhood front groups operating here in the U.S. Indeed, there is no other public interest law firm as uniquely qualified to fight this battle. But we need your prayers and financial support to succeed. Please consider a tax-deductible donation to support our critical fight for your faith and freedom. Visit us at www.AmericanFreedomLawCenter.org.
I'm Fred Fleitch with the Center for Security Policy. One of President Obama's worst foreign policy failings is the lack of a strategy to defeat al-Qaeda and ISIS. These terrorist groups are part of a global movement to establish Islamic supremacy and Sharia through violence. This movement is called the Global Jihad Movement. It will not be defeated without a strategy that recognizes its true nature. In January 2015, we issued a comprehensive strategy to defeat the global jihad movement. It is called the Secure Freedom Strategy and is based on National Security Directive 75, the strategy that President Ronald Reagan used to defeat the global totalitarian threat of his time, the Soviet Union. Like President Reagan's strategy, we lay out a comprehensive plan on how the United States government can be reorganized and focused to understand and defeat the global jihad movement. You can read the Secure Freedom Strategy at securefreedom.org, or you can purchase a copy on Amazon.com. I'm Fred Fleitz.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
Annie Soldier Incorporated was started in August 2003 as a simple family effort to help the soldiers in one Army unit, thus the name. However, due to overwhelming requests, on January 1, 2004, the Annie Soldier effort was expanded so it would include any member of any of the armed services in harm's way. Won't you please help? Find out how by going to www.anysoldier.com today.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. I'm very pleased to say we have Bill Gertz staying with us for a second block to talk further about some of the very important topics that he's been covering at the Washington Free Beacon and in the Washington Times, and specifically some of the capabilities that are most egregiously being, well, shortchanged or undermined by us and made worse by the fact that adversaries are stealing a march on us. Bill, maybe we could start with what you're picking up about the prospect specifically that the Chinese, and I imagine the Russians and perhaps others, are readying for space warfare. We talked about the Middle East, we've talked about Asia and other theaters, but space is arguably one of the most important of all. What's up with our capabilities to deal with that potential threat?
Well, the military commanders this week, several of them, appeared before Congress, specifically the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Strategic Forces, to outline what I described in several reports as the growing threat of space warfare. First was the Strategic Command commander, Admiral Cecil Haney, who talked about the Chinese conducting last July a very specific anti-satellite missile test, which the Chinese claim was a missile defense test. Haney appeared before reporters at the Pentagon a day or 2 days after his testimony and talked about this test as saying, this is a real threat, it's growing. And then 2 days later, before the subcommittee, a group of Air Force officials and Pentagon officials for the first time outlined these space threats and plans for countering them. Again, because of the Obama administration's refusal to meet force head-on and capabilities head-on, they have developed a passive approach to dealing with these threats, primarily through greater intelligence capabilities, something called space situational awareness, where you're being able to spot a moving satellite very quickly. And that's really because the Chinese have deployed and tested some killer robot satellites. And then they've set up a command. And this one general, Lieutenant General Raymond, an Air Force general, said, every satellite in every orbit is currently vulnerable to attack. And that's a real strategic threat to the United States.
What does it mean, Bill? Because I think we talk about, you know, space and it becoming a theater of military operations. But just remind us, what's at stake if some other nation is able to, well, deny us the use of space or dominate it in other ways to our detriment?
Well, first of all, space warfare is an Achilles heel for the U.S. military. The reason that we have an exquisite military power projection capability is because of satellites. They do everything from command and control to intelligence gathering to navigation and to targeting, all of our precision weapons. The Chinese have figured this out. They did an exercise a number of years ago, the Pentagon did, called Air-Sea Battle 2020. And in the opening of that exercise, it was a simulation, the Chinese fired 20 anti-satellite missiles and took out critical satellites. And the rest basically was that the U.S. lost the conflict with China. So this has been recognized for at least the last 10 years as a severe strategic vulnerability for the United States. And much more needs to be done to counter this. And we need space weapons. We need anti-satellite missiles. We need to develop our SM-3s so that they can be used for satellite warfare. And yet the Obama administration has taken a passive approach to it, unfortunately.
Yeah. And I know you would agree, additional situational awareness in space as well. That's a very, very difficult problem and one that I think we're also falling short on. But, Bill, I guess I just want to emphasize as we move on to another topic that in addition to the military assets in space and the critical dependence of our terrestrial forces, whether they're literally on the ground or at sea or in the air, on space for communications and for positioning and for everything else, it's unquestionably the case that it would be devastating, as that exercise indicated. But so would it be for our civilian economy if we were to lose the kind of use of space that we have enjoyed and take for granted, frankly. Bill, let me turn to one other topic that you have also written about at the Free Beacon, I think it was this week. More warnings from some of the other commanders about the cruise missile threat to the homeland. How grave is that, and what is being done to try to counter it?
Wow, this is a really surprising story. The commander of the U.S. Northern Command, Admiral Gortney, testified that the Russians are developing a new cruise missile called the KH-101. It's a conventionally armed cruise missile, which poses a direct threat to the United States. He said this in open testimony. It was very surprising that he did so. And it comes after a number of simulated Russian cruise missile attacks on the United States that I reported on last year. And basically, he said that the U.S. has a big problem in defending against this missile, which is designed to have a long range and to conduct attacks on our infrastructure, that is our electrical grid, water supplies, transportation, and those kinds of things. And he was trumpeting a new cruise missile defense system that we have that's basically, we've got one deployed. It's an aerostat or a blimp, which provides sensor capabilities against this kind of attack. But again, this is a new threat that he talked about from the Russians, and it was fairly surprising that he did so.
Well, it is surprising. I think this is a threat that we've seen coming for a long time, and the inadequacies of our sensors and our defenses, ability to intercept these things, has been a yawning problem. It's not a surprise, really, that the Russians are taking advantage of it, and I suspect others will do it in due course. And Bill, I think what compounds all of this is not only the threat that you've been documenting so well, the bombers flying into our airspace and so on that could be used as platforms for that missile, but also the so-called Club missile, Club K missile launch system, covertly concealed launchers in containers, which could be put on any ship just about sailing in our waters. Lastly, Bill, let me just quickly turn to one other topic which you've been tracking better than just about anybody else, as usual, and that is the adequacy of our defenses against ballistic missiles. I was really struck by something you reported on, the admiral in charge of our missile defense agency, warning that even the North Korean missile capabilities may overmatch, I think is the word he used, our missile defenses. Heavens forfend. That certainly means we're way short of what we need for Russian and Chinese threats, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Admiral Searing, the Missile Defense Agency director, testified that he might be in a position to have to tell Admiral Gortney that our missile defenses are overmatched even against a North Korean threat, which is limited to known 6 road mobile ICBMs and an unknown number of long-range Taepodong missiles. So we definitely have a learning curve. They've cut the budget for missile defense as part of the overall defense cuts, and this is leading to a lot of reconsideration about the need for greater missile defenses to defend the homeland against that threat, as well as the Chinese and Russian threats.
Yeah. This is especially so in the face of what we're now seeing increasingly on the part of at least the Russians and Chinese, and I guess the Indians and others now, of both maneuvering warheads and hypersonic ones. And this is a subject that I know we'll be returning to again and again. I hope that we are actually going to see some technology breakthroughs in this area. I think, as you've reported, Bill, there are some options available. We just need to get on with applying them. Thank you so much for your extra time today, Bill Gertz, as always, and for all that you do to cover these stories so well in both of your outlets, the Washington Free Beacon and the Washington Times. We'll look forward to talking with you again next week, and we'll look forward to talking with the rest of you as well next Monday. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.